Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff Jarrett.
This is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is. Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk.
Hello and welcome to the WrestleTalk podcast, part one of your Wednesday podcast output. I am Luke Owen and I'm joined by my fellow intangible, I guess, for this episode of the podcast, Tempest.
Wow. We were skirting the line here for a little bit of what are we doing here? I'm replacing Mr. Davis, you're replacing Pete, but really sticking a label on it today, aren't you?
Well, I mean, I kind of feel like I have to, right? Like, it's the NXT show. I can't just not pretend. And particularly because we had, like, four intangibles on this episode of NXT. It felt weird for me not to mention it.
Oh, just my favorite part of the show. Back again. This is one of the things that I was most disappointed, but there's a long stretch between NXT takeovers. And I was like, oh, am I really going to have to wait that long to see some more intangibles? But we got a few on this show, so that'll tide me over.
Oh, we certainly did. And what intangibles we got as well, which we're going to cover on this episode of the podcast. But first, we will be wanting to talk about this new faction that debuted because they rule and I think they're great. Here's the show. On the opposite side of that, this is more of like a hip-hop side of things. We've got a debut on this episode, and it's kind of like we had this group sort of slightly debut in the Scott Ruff match, because that's when we had, like, you know, looks like Scott's got some backup, and we've had some bits and bobs here and there, but this is the first time they've come out as a group, as an act, and introduced themselves as Hit Row. And it's Isaiah Swerve Scott. It is AJ Francis, who is now being called Top Dollar with an A. Brianna Brandy, who signed with WWE a couple of years ago. She's now B-Fab. And Ashante Adonis, or The. And it's just like they came out. They look amazing. They've got this wicked entrance music. They come down to the ring looking like $1 million. And then they get this big red chair out for Scott to sit in. And then each one of them just gets their promo time. And do you know what was great about this faction is there was not a weak link. Every single person cut an awesome promo. I haven't talked to you about this yet, so I don't know what your feelings are on this group, but I friggin' loved it.
Oh yeah, I will say right off the bat here, we went from possibly the most negative I've ever been on a podcast on Raw to probably the most positive I will ever be on a podcast, because I thought this show was just a smashing good time. And this new faction was a big part of that. This, every once in a while, we get a new faction or a new act or something like that, a new character perhaps, where it feels like people are playing a role. And this is the complete, total antithesis of that. This is the opposite. Everyone here feels like they've completely embodied their roles. I don't even know how much acting is really going on. These guys just completely, completely embody this new character and new faction that they're a part of. It feels cool. And even though they're heels, like every once in a while, like we've been saying this on the past couple NXT podcasts, where I don't necessarily feel like Kyle O'Reilly, like Cool Kyle, is cool. Like, there's a difference between manufactured cool and actual cool.
Oh yeah,
these guys are actually cool. Like, I see these guys and I was like, I'm not cool enough to hang out with these guys.
No,
like,
yeah, totally.
You know, like, these guys are so cool. I said in the written review that I think the ceiling for this group is just so incredibly high. If they don't give Isaiah Swerve Scott like the first shot at Bronson Reed when he wins the North American title, I think they're missing the boat on this guy. Like, he could be a top star on any brand right now. He's got the swagger. He's got the charisma. He's got the in-ring ability. This guy, to me, is just a total package. And to have him be surrounded by a total package of a group,
yeah.
Oh, it's exciting, man. It's really exciting.
So exciting. Now, I am going to, this will come across as a bit of a braggart thing to do. And I don't mean to come across as just like a, I told you so. But back in the day when Laurie, Blake and I used to do this NXT review, we once did a video, and I've got the thumbnail for it here. Is this man the future of NXT? That was published on July 3rd, 2019. Look at that. Is Isaiah Swerve Scott the future of NXT? It's lovely to know I was right, because Laurie and I on that show, because that was during the, God, what did they call it? Just sort of like the breakout tournament or
the
something?
The breakout tournament, yeah.
Yeah, like Bronson Reed debuted in that. And I think Dexter Lumis was in that like tournament as
sure
well.
Sure did. So,
like, but that show, like that was in a period of time when Laurie and I were doing the NXT reviews and it was just on the network, there were just like shows where nothing was happening. And that was an episode where the pair of us watched it and was like, dude, did you see Isaiah Swerve Scott's debut? That guy is an absolute star. He has just got like every single thing that you need to create a top guy in a promotion. And that's why we ran with that as the headline. And we basically, just the first 10 minutes was us gushing about how great Swerve Scott was. So it's so awesome to be able to see, like, going from that point there, not even 2 years ago, you know, just in that breakout tournament, to now where he is just like, you said it there, he's like the total package and he's got the total package around him. And like, yeah, you need to be like strapping the rocket to this guy and this group right now.
Yeah, to me, right now seems like a perfect time, because we've talked about how NXT from time to time may feel a little bit stale just because of guys like Gargano and Ciampa and Balor and Cole kind of being at the top of the division for a really long time now. Man, if you want a guy to just be the next NXT champion and be the next big thing, big star to come out of NXT, this is your guy. Like, it's right in front of you. And if you want like the next big act and next big faction around him, you've now got that too. Like, there are no negatives with this guy as far as I'm concerned. He's got the timing. He's got the charisma. He's got a swagger about him. He just feels like a star. And that's not something you get very often in wrestling. Just the guy who you see him and is like, oh, that guy's a star. Like, you turn on the TV and will make you stop changing the channels. To me, this is that guy. I could not be happier to see him getting a push. I've been a fan of his since he was Shane Strickland on the indies. Oh, he's fantastic.
Yeah, so great. And this group has got an amazing presence to it. So if you haven't seen the show, what essentially what this act is they're like, they're a rap group. They're like a rap record label. And it really reminded me, and kind of what I think is so wonderful about this, and I'm going to very much show my age here. So I'm just going to put that out in front of you. I'm going to show my age here. But about 20 odd years ago, Louis Theroux used to do a series of documentaries here in the UK called Weird Weekends, where he would go out and he would spend a weekend with sort of like subcultures around the US. So he did one about swingers, and he did one about gamblers, and he did one about some of the other ones that he did. Actually, he did a wrestling one. Like, there's one of his most famous ones is he goes to like a WCW show, and he then gets invited to go to the power plants and like spend a day training with them. And the Sarge gets so pissed off at him because he had the temerity to ask, is wrestling fake? And like,
I've seen this.
Yeah. And Sarge like runs him ragged and makes him like throw up during training because he pushes him far too hard in it. It's a brilliant documentary. Also features Raven right at the start of Louis Theroux going up to ask Raven a question. And Raven's like, do you know who I am? And Louis's like, nope. He's like, wait, so you're doing a documentary about wrestling and you don't know who I am? Well, this is going to be a terrible documentary. Boom, that's how the doc starts. It's so, so great. But like, this is the episode that he did on rap music and gangster rap. Like, he went around and he just found like all these sort of like underground labels and stuff that had like crews and posses, and they had like their artist in there. It's a wicked documentary series on Netflix as well called The Evolution of Hip Hop, that's got like, or Hip Hop Evolution, I think it's called, that's got like, that kind of covers this kind of ground as well. And that's what it reminded me of. I looked and I was like, man, that these guys look like the sort of group that Louis Threw would have interviewed in that gangster rap documentary about 20 years ago. But what's wonderful about it is that because that's like 20 odd years ago, is now like coming back around. So it's now, it's got this nostalgic flavor to it, but it's also brand new and it feels new and it feels fresh.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my first thought when I saw all of this was, it feels like Death Row Records.
Yeah, you know? Totally. That's exactly it.
That obviously was very big and very popular and wasn't necessarily as like underground as some other things. But if you're going to emulate something like that, that's a pretty good one to emulate, because mm-hmm. not only were they all incredibly talented, but you have some real personalities there. And if you want to start to emulate some of those personalities and bring a little bit of that flavor into the presentation of this, oh, it's so good. Like, I didn't even know they were going to be a group when Isaiah Swerve Scott started doing the backstage segments where he was cutting his promos in the studio. Because that was the first thing that Pete and I started gushing about, was all his promo segments feel different. They've got a different flavor, a different context to them. And Lord knows if he ever gets called up, if they'll keep doing this sort of thing. But that's the main roster for you. And it doesn't matter, because we're talking about NXT here. Everything about this act is fantastic. I want to see this act four times on every show.
I'm super excited for like the first six-man tag, or actually just like the tag team like stuff that Top Dollar and Adonis can do, while you've got Swerve Scott as the singles guy, and you've got I've already forgotten her name there. What's everybody know? B-Fab, sorry, it's because I was about to call her Brianna then. But yeah, B-Fab, like pushing her in the singles division for the women. Like, there's so many like elements that you could do in this. It's tremendously excited. I'm really, really stoked about this. And also, like, what a great time to like debut a new faction just after you split up possibly the greatest faction that NXT has ever had in the Undisputed Era. It's basically like the Undisputed Era splitting up has now given you the open platform to be like, cool, well, now let's have a new top faction come in instead.
And they're totally different from them, too. How often do we see just like the invading force faction, where they're all the same thing with a different paint job? These two factions are completely different. They're both heels. They can both be cocky and arrogant, but you've got the one side that's like the cool hip hop faction, and you've got the other side that are like the kind of cool, but a little bit dorky jocks, and they can both excellent and both be totally different. And that's exactly what you need out of NXT right now, is something that's different. And these guys are different.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Let's see what you've got to say about this in the Ultra chat. Bacon Rash is in first to say, hi, lads. Not sure if I like this new group yet. Maybe it's because I'm 36, but I'll give it time to grow on me. Problem with Hit Row. First time I heard of it, I thought of Skid Row, as in Skid Mark. The show itself, though, I thought was great this week. Jam that jam. Yeah, like there is a part of me that is just like, you know, I am a 35-year-old white male. Like, I am not the target audience for this group. But I look at it, I was like, dude, like, it's everything about this just like smells of success. And I dig it.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've gushed enough about it for one podcast. But yeah, man, I think this group just has the highest ceiling. I can't wait to see what they do. Like, if this faction flops, I don't think I will recover.
The Portuguese Mr. Davis says, hey, boys, this show was awesome. Loved everything about it, especially the Grimes DiBiase segments. Question, do you feel like Karrion Kross should develop his moveset? Feels like he's limited. I'm probably wrong, but thoughts. Much love from Portugal.
So I have interest. I would have very interesting thoughts about this, because I am someone, and I've talked about this before, where to me the most important part of wrestling is what happens bell to bell. And that's just me personally. I know a lot of people don't look at it that way, and that's something that I totally understand different viewpoints on. If you prefer promos and like goofy wrestling segments, that sort of thing, that's totally fine. To me, my most important thing is what you do in the ring. And I don't look at it as, well, they need a really cool move set. You know, I was never the guy that got on John Cena for only having five moves, or getting on Roman Reigns for hitting Superman punch and the spear and the apron drop kick or whatever. Like, that to me isn't that's not the goal. It's not the different kinds of moves. It's what you do with those moves and what kind of stories you tell and whatnot. That being said, I do think that Karrion Kross could benefit a little bit from a bit more of a diversified moveset, because a lot of the things that he does right now don't necessarily look the cleanest. Like a lot of his forearm strikes in this match that we'll get to, I didn't think looked particularly great if he's supposed to be like this big monstrous killer. So if he could either clean that up a little bit or add some new things in, take a few things out, I think he could probably benefit from it.
Indeed, yeah. Kevin said, I like the Hit Row promo, but I feel like it would have been better if it was in their studio. Also, Luke, it's cool to see you back on the NXT reviews again. I feel like NXT is back to where it was when you reviewed it with Laurie. New stars instead of counter-programming. Yeah, that's a really good point. Like, I think NXT, since it's moved to Tuesdays, has felt like, it sucks to say this, and I don't like to say this either, but NXT stopped being cool. Like, during like the whole, when they went to the USA Network, like moving to the USA Network made them feel uncool, and it felt like a real try hard program. It was still good, but it was never like, it never captured that early NXT magic. It never captured that 2014 to 2018 magic. And it was a real shame. And it was like, it was a shame to like not watch, because it was a fun show, but at the same time I was like, it's really missing something. But I feel like now, since the move to Tuesdays, and now it's back to being its own product again, I really feel like we're starting to like build the groundworks now for us to get back to that magic that we used to have.
Yeah, I've been saying for the last few weeks that I feel we've gotten back to a lot more of what NXT used to be, especially when we had like the main event between Kyle O'Reilly and Cameron Grimes, where it was just, here's a really good show. They don't try and do too much on the show. They don't try and put like 10 different angles on there to make everybody watch NXT instead of AEW. They can just have a good, consistent show with consistent storytelling and then a really good match in the main event. That to me is what NXT was at its peak, and also like really good long-term storytelling. Add all that together, that was NXT for me. Now I feel like we're getting back to that. This episode to me was the best episode of NXT that I have reviewed since NXT TakeOver. Oh, I'm excited. Like, yeah. And I do have more, I guess now's as good a time as any to bring this up, but I did feel like maybe it had something to do with a lot of those same faces that we've heard for so long. None of them really wrestled on this show. There were some older names as far as NXT goes, like Kyle O'Reilly wrestled, Pete Dunne wrestled, but for the most part, like Ciampa wasn't on the show, Cole wasn't on the show, Gargano was in like a few segments but didn't wrestle, and I thought that made this show feel so refreshing that there were just new stars like Isaiah Swerve Scott and Cameron Grimes, or not, well, yeah, Cameron Grimes was in a segment, but Karrion Kross, all these Leon different Ruff. Guys, Kushida, Leon Ruff, so many of these guys were now getting the spotlight put on them. And they were all able to do that because you didn't have these other guys not hogging the spotlight, but I think they've been there too long. And when they're not there, this show felt so refreshing and so good.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get into the show. Let's get into the show now, actually, because I thought this was an awesome episode of NXT. Like, I've really enjoyed NXT since it's gone to Tuesday nights, but hot dang did I get a good week for, like, Pete to take off, and, so I can come in and review and gush over this show. It's good to me, because, like, it was, even from, like, the opening video package, where it was essentially just like, hey, do you know who are great? Champions. Do you know who are also great? They're challengers. Hey, do you know what's great? They're now going to have a fight. And I'm like, cool. It got me so hyped up for this show because this video package absolutely ruled.
Yeah. I mean, this is all I want out of wrestling is a great champion who wins and then a great challenger who wins and then they wrestle each other and only one person can win. That's wrestling. And it's not done like that often enough. So when it is done perfectly, I'm just like, oh, more of this, please. Oh, it's fantastic stuff. Fantastic. And yeah. Then they opened with a match. Let's go.
Yeah, and it was like, you know, already in the ring, it's Austin Theory. So now you just get to watch the cool Karrion Kross entrance and everything, which is still like, it's an incredible entrance. And it's so, so cool. And it makes him look like an absolute star as well. And I mean, I wrote in my notes here, this isn't going to go long because it's Karrion Kross versus Austin Theory. But actually, like, Austin Theory got way more of this match than I thought he was going to because Gargano caused a bit of distraction. And then eventually it was Karrion Kross just kicking his ass far too much. And the referee, hey, do you know what was great? The referee didn't DQ him for kicking too much ass. The referee stopped the match because he was kicking too much ass and awarded him the win because he was kicking all of the ass. That's what a referee stoppage should be. Not be like, oh, sorry, mate. Were you beating him up too much in the corner there? I think it's time to DQ, sir.
It's the best finish in wrestling as far as I'm concerned. It's just this guy is by far clearly the better man. He just beat him into submission. Fantastic stuff. I thought the match itself was like really good. I thought it was like a really fun way to open the show. I also thought this would be more of a squash than it ended up being, but it's okay because I don't know if you know this, Luke, but my favorite move in all of pro wrestling is the fall away slam, and Austin Theory hit a fall away slam. So this match just bumped itself up another star just for that. But yeah, they did a really good job of making Austin Theory feel at least like slightly competent, although he is like the lackey of the way. He's the guy to take the fall so Johnny Gargano doesn't have to. But they did a really good job of like protecting him enough that he is a capable wrestler, but also he's facing this crazy monstrous NXT champion. Like he shouldn't get that much offense, you know? I think he got like the perfect amount of offense for a match like this.
One of the other great thing I loved about this show as well is that it was setting up a lot of like future things down the line, right? So you've got like Johnny Gargano on the outside. We saw this last week because you had like, you know, like 25 men come out and be like, well, I should be the number one contender. Well, what was great about that as well is that you looked at all the 25 men and be like, yeah, I could buy it. I'd totally buy every single one of them. And then this show follows up with that because you have Gargano on the outside. You then have Balor after this match being like, I want my rematch. And Karrion Kross was like, yes, let's have that. And it will be in 2 weeks' time. But then later on in this show, you had Pete Dunne absolutely killing poor Leon Ruff. And how did he win? By ref stoppage. He won the exact same way that Karrion Kross did. So now I'm looking at it and being like, okay, cool. Well, I've got Balor in 2 weeks' time, but there's also Gargano over there. And he's like, you know, the face of NXT. He's always been there, the heart and soul of NXT. But we've also got this Pete Dunne fella who's just won the exact same way that Karrion Kross did. So I now want to see them collide. It's spinning multiple plates at once in a really balanced and just like a well thought out fashion. And like, that's kind of what you want from your top champion. It isn't just a great champion, it's multiple contenders to that champion.
And not only just multiple contenders, but there's different ways that the storyline can go. You know, we've been theorizing the last few weeks that this is all going to lead to a six-pack challenge at TakeOver, and I don't know how necessarily that's going to work with Finn Balor having this title match in a couple of weeks. Maybe they'll do a DQ. I don't really like that idea, but I also don't want him to get beat here either. So I don't know. There's different things that you can do, but it's exciting to not know exactly how they're going to get to the destination. And maybe they won't even do the six-pack challenge, but I think that's a really good way to incorporate so much main event talent into one match.
What we got next was a match that good Lord, this was fun. So this was a tag match between Breezango and MSK. Now, you know, we had that hyper chat in from Bacon Rasher that was just like, I'm 36, so I don't really like, I wasn't really on board with like Hit Row right from the get-go. I mean, I'm a 35-year-old man. I'm on Team Grizzled Veterans here. I am Team Grizzled Young Vets all the way. I hate this MSK lads. I hate them. Like, what? They are, I think they're a bunch of knobs. Like, I've always thought they were a bunch of knobs. Like, I thought they were a bunch of knobs when they were the Rascals in Impact. I used to come out and do like the thing. I was like, get off my, you a bunch of dicks, like, you just dorks. Like, I'm a grump, I'm an old man yelling at clouds here. I fully appreciate that, but I do look at me like, god, I don't like you. I do not want to be at a party that you're at. Like, I want to be at a party with Zach Gibson and James Drake. I do not want to be at a party that you're at.
Wow, what a heel turn. What a heel turn. We were going so strong here, Luke. Well, I mean I really like MSK. Get off
my lawn, you youths.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. That's pretty much it. I mean, I fully appreciate both MSK and the Grizzled Young Vets. I want that to be like the long running tag feud in NXT, you know, for the rest of the year, basically. But I thought this match was like really fun. I do enjoy MSK's moves. I got to give a big shout out to my man, Daryl Sharma, the Hornet, Battle Arts Academy alumni. He was one of the trainers at the wrestling school that I was training at before the pandemic. So it was really fun to see him go all PWG in this match and hit a drop down leapfrog. I don't really know why he did it. It was just kind of like, we're just going to do a PWG spot in the middle of this match.
And I loved it. Absolutely loved it. Like, if you're going to have a match with MSK and Breezango, that is the absolute sort of like stuff that I want to see. Like, watching this, like, it made me, you know, fall back in love with Breezango again, because it reminded me of, like, you know, the Usos feud that they had with, like, one of the funniest things I've seen in wrestling since working at WrestleTalk was the whole, like, rolling from, like, the log rolling from one corner to the other when the Uso kept going up for the splash. Like, really, really great stuff. And so whenever, like, you got Breezango in a match and all of a sudden the referee does a drop-down leapfrog, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. That just totally makes sense. In the same way that if I went to a PWG show and they did, I'd be like, yep, that totally adds up. No complaints from me here.
Yeah. I did think it was kind of, I think it's a little bit odd that, I don't know that they're going to break up Breezango, but it seemed like that was the vibe I was getting at the end of the match, because they were really pushing their frustrations on commentary, and then they seemed, of course, they just lost, so fair enough, they should be frustrated, but it seemed like there was a little bit more of something there. I don't really want to see them break up. I'm not super invested in the characters or anything, but I need more tag teams than just like two or three on this show. Let's keep them around.
This match was an incredible amount of fun. And like, you know, I know I just went on my box there about how like MSK just like annoy the piss out of me, man. And I don't even know if it's them. Like, I just think it's the way they look. Just be like, your hair's dumb, your faces are dumb, your attitude stinks, get off my lawn. Like, I want to be hanging out with the Grizzled Young Vets and we could just sit there and talk about how dumb and stupid you are. Like, it was the Zach Gibson promo when he was just said they're the biggest bunch of knobheads I've ever met. And I was like, yep, Zach, I'm 100% on your side here.
I do think Nash Carter probably could use a haircut, but that's just me.
Anyway, after I was done telling them to get off my lawn, I wrote in my notes, I love that match. Here's a shocker for you. NXT's a better show than Raw.
I like that the show that we just did was considered like a good Raw. Like, I got a good one and I was like, what? And then you come on here and you get the best NXT I've seen in 2 months.
Right, we then got a backstage segment. We had a backstage segment with Leon Ruff as well, but I'm going to save that till we get to the Ruff match. We had one with Gargano storming into Regal's office because he's got a match with Bronson Reed next week. And it was sort of a wonderful little like mini show long storyline because Gargano's like, I'm annoyed at you, Regal, because you booked me in a match with Bronson Reed next week. And I don't want a match with Bronson Reed next week. This whole situation stinks and I don't like it. And he kind of like angers Regal in that. So later on in the show, he's like, well, I'll just take actions into my own hands then. I'm going to attack Bronson Reed in the locker room. How'd you like them apples, Mr. Regal? And then Mr. Regal makes it a cage match. So it's like, ooh, Regal!
You know what this really reminded me of? This really reminded me of the interactions that Kurt Angle and Mick Foley would have backstage, like that kind of sniveling, dorky heel and the commissioner role where he goes in there to be like, you Regal, you gotta fix this. I'm not happy. And he's like, well, the NXT North American champion, just stop doing that. Stop. And he's looking around for things to break and be mad and smash stuff. And he's like, don't you do it. Don't. Gargano, don't do it. And he breaks his pencil. And that to me was such like a Kurt Angle move from 2000, yeah. Dealing with Mick Foley. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, really, really great. We got a promo for NXT UK. Will Zaya Brookside ignore vaccines enough to compete in the competition? Pete Dunne then cut a promo because he says that Karrion Kross has picked Finn Balor because he knows that Pete Dunne is the toughest opponent. He's not wrong either. He's amazing. And Leon Ruff attacks him. Now, Leon Ruff had a conversation with Regal earlier in the show where he was like, look, I want to compete. Let me compete tonight. And Regal was just like, absolutely not. I know you're cleared, but I don't think it's in your best interest to go out there and have a match. But Leon Ruff, being the little hothead that he is, went out there and tried to start a fight with Pete Dunne. Didn't work out well for him because Pete Dunne just dismantled this poor little lad here from pillar to post. And like, just, yeah, as we said earlier, beat him down so much. The referee was like, I am calling this off and I'm going to announce Pete Dunne as the winner.
Yeah, I don't want to make it sound like I just discovered how great Pete Dunne is, because that's absurd. Pete Dunne is Pete Dunne and he's been amazing forever. But I watched Pete Dunne and I found a new appreciation for him in this match. He just had so many great little tidbit moments with his offense, whether it's just like right at the beginning when he's turning Leon Ruff over with his head and keeping him pinned down with his head so he doesn't get up, and hooking the legs when he's grappling around with him. And it felt like a real fight. There was like a next level of intensity and realism to his offense that I felt like, yeah, because so often, like if you actually look at wrestling, it's like, why aren't you just getting up right now? You know, so much of that. And there were so many moments when Pete Dunne was just like making it as difficult as possible for Leon Ruff to fight back. And it's not the kind of thing that I notice when it doesn't happen, but when Pete Dunne does it, I'm like, oh, what a perfect wrestler. Like, what a perfect technician.
There was, I remember this way, way, way back when it was during the Cruiserweight Classic, and it was when Zack Sabre Jr. was in that tournament. Do you remember Zack Sabre Jr. wrestled in WWE for a bit? Do you remember he was meant to win? The whole plan was that it was meant to be Zack Sabre Jr. versus Kota Ibushi in the finals, because both of them were going to, and then both of them were like, yeah, I don't want to work here though. Like, I'm happy to come in for your tournament, but I don't want to. I'm not working here. So they were like, right, well, cool. Let's knock them out the semifinals then. And our final was, it was TJP. Who was the other person in it? Who was the other person in the final?
It was Grand Metalik, the man that went on about on Raw.
That's right, it was. Yeah, not the plan. But yeah, so there was a period of time when Zack Sabre Jr., weird timeline this was, wrestled in WWE for a couple of weeks, and I remember like talking to some friends about this, about how wrestling is kind of like went through a different, and like it's certainly from an American viewpoint, but like here in England, it's kind of always been this way. But it was about like technician. It was about being a technical style of wrestler. And in the sort of Lucha Libre style of things, it's about doing it as quickly as you possibly can. And the American way is very much like this as well. It's about like being quick with your transitions. Let's be quick. Like we go from this to this, to this, to this, to this. The British style of wrestling, particularly with people like Dunn and Zack Sabre Jr., it's about, no, I want you, the audience, to see what I'm doing. So I'm taking his arm here and I'm twisting it this way because that really hurts. And then I'm going to put this into position here. And that allows the person you're facing to then sell that even more and like sell the pain over time. And I've always loved that about Zach. And I always adore it about Pete Dunne as well, because he's so like slow with the transition to be like, oh, I am spending 5 minutes on this arm, but I'm going to do two things. But I'm going to make it look like I'm doing a multitude of things.
Yeah, I hadn't looked at it necessarily just like that, but it's a great point. A lot of the time, if you go into a submission hold that's like an arm bar or a wrist lock or something like that, if you do that really fast, sometimes people don't even really know what the move is necessarily. It's like, oh, he's in a submission hold, he's selling. If you do it really slow and meticulously, like you do here with Pete Dunne, you can see him bending the arm back over his knee. It's like, well, that hurts. And then he bends it again into the wrist lock. I was like, well, that hurts. And you get a better understanding of like what's actually going down and be like, yeah, I'd tap out from that right now from just this rest hold that he's applying. That doesn't look like any fun to be a part of. Yeah. Top marks for Pete Dunne on this evening. Although,
absolutely.
I will say, and maybe I missed it, so if I missed this segment, correct me, please. I would have liked to see some follow-up about Leon Ruff. To me, this would have been something that he should have been disciplined for. Like, if he went backstage and William Regal was like, God damn it, I told you, you were not allowed to wrestle, you did this, you could have gotten seriously hurt, you're suspended. Something like that. I would have thought that would be a really good way to wrap up this show-long storyline, but it didn't really happen. So,
yeah, well, I think we'll keep an eye out for that for next week to see if there is some follow, because I would like that as well. Like, I think there does need to be something with Regal and Ruff here. Like, you know, it does need to be some form of a teaching lesson for him to be like, dude, I told you not to go out there. What did you do? You went and got killed. You went and attacked Pete Dunne of all people. Like, you went out there and attacked someone you could possibly beat. You went out there and attacked Pete Dunne. That was a very silly idea. We've got a bit of a stack show coming up in a couple of weeks' time, because not only have we got Balor versus Cross for the NXT title, but also the debut of Frankie Monet.
Yeah, we don't know who her opponent is going to be. I had theorized that her first match would come at TakeOver against Io Shirai. I don't think they're going to have that match on TV, so she could just beat someone and then build to that, perhaps. I really, really love that they're building 2 weeks ahead of time for all these shows. This has, I don't want to compare everything to AEW, but one of the things that I've always loved about AEW is you know what you're going to watch on that show. You know what you're going to watch this week. You know what you're going to watch next week. And probably they're going to announce stuff for 2 weeks down the line. And that's such a fantastic way to build long-term storytelling, because it locks you in. You have to do that thing, and it prevents plans from just being changed every week, which, man, if they started booking 2 weeks ahead of time on Raw, of course they wouldn't stick to it, but they should. It's great. Launch. Oh, more of this, please.
Also very much enjoyed Mercedes Martinez versus Raquel Gonzalez, not only because it was a great match, but Tempest, we got the return of intangible facts about people. So
hit me with them, Luke.
Okay, so the intangibles, Mercedes Martinez's intangibles are fearless and grit.
Grit. Mm-hmm. Not gritty. Again, is it an adjective or is it a noun? Please get it together, guys.
And Raquel
fearlessness. It's fearless and grit. She has grit. She's not gritty.
She has fearless and grit. And Raquel Gonzalez is not a powerhouse, powerhouse, and ruthless.
Not ruthlessness! She is ruthless, and she is a powerhouse! What is going on? Why is this such a thing? You could put them together! Oh God, this sends me every time. Oh, God.
It's okay. Like, so this is, I do not want to come across as a negative Nancy here, because I loved this show. I really did. I had an absolute blast watching it, and I'm having an absolute blast reviewing it as well. The intangible gimmick is one of the dumbest things going on any brand whatsoever. If this was on Raw, this is like Braun Strowman having the train sounds level of just like, that's incredibly goofy. Because it came up every time I saw one, it just made me laugh.
And that's like, we got them
again in the main event. And it made me laugh again.
Oh, yeah. That's what makes it great. There's a reason that this is our team name. This was an entire segment of our show at TakeOver. Oh my God.
It's doesn't my convey their thing. Characters. It doesn't get over their characters or anything. It's just, it just puzzles me. Just I'm looking at it, I'm laughing. And then afterwards being like, huh, grit.
Yeah.
Huh.
You know,
powerhouse.
At this point, I don't even want them to make sense. I'm getting so much more enjoyment out of this being the one dumb ass moment of NXT that I can look forward to when they announce a title match. This 100% makes me tune in to watch NXT more. And maybe that's just because I have this show to make a joke out of it. But
it's gonna make me
want to
watch next week's show as well, just because, like, there's another title match next week. There's more intangibles to be found.
There's more intangibles every week. And then we've got TakeOver coming. Oh, that's going to be a show full of intangibles.
Oh, my God. It's intangibles out the wazoo. Also, shout out to SP3 of True Heel Heat, who's in the chat watching along. Thank you very much for joining us. Good luck in Quizzlemania tonight, my friend.
I was going to say that. Yeah.
Yeah, good luck indeed. Obviously, you know, my boy Sullivan Brown is on the show. So I kind of want to be pulling for him. But if I'm pulling for a close second, it's certainly not Sean. It's going to be SP3. Oh, what an absolute dude he is. What a handsome... It is the handsomest Quizzlemania ever.
It is a handsome battle. Absolutely.
Anywho, Mercedes Martinez, unfortunately, her fearless and grit did not help her here, because Raquel's powerhouse and ruthless meant that she won the match with a very impressive powerbomb slam style thing. Very hard hitting, very, very good. Raquel's gimmick is not only powerhouse and ruthless, she has an impressive back.
Yeah, I thought this was a little bit odd, but it's whatever. You got to find different ways to pose with a belt, I suppose. So flex your back muscles. Yeah, I haven't seen it done. Yeah. You know, but yeah, I thought this match was it wasn't a perfect match, but it was perfect for what it should have been. And that is, you beat someone who's kind of like mid upper level in the NXT women's division, who can make Raquel look good, is a veteran, and had a really good hard-hitting match that fit the style that both people wrestle. Like,
yeah,
I got no complaints on this one. I don't have very many complaints on this whole show. But this match itself was really fun, and I'm very excited to see where they go next, because they don't really have a next challenger lined up for Raquel. So we've still got time before TakeOver, but there's a lot of different ways that they could go with that.
Do you think they'll pull the Dakota trigger?
Not yet. I think eventually we'll end up there, but maybe I'm wrong, because again, no one really sticks out to me right off the bat. You know, I guess you could do something like Saray, but even still, I feel like that's a little early. But I don't know, maybe makes as much sense as anything else I've heard. Yeah.
Next up, because we had the Hit Row stuff, but then next up, Cameron Grimes is trying to buy a house.
I love this so much.
So Cameron Grimes busts out of his car, and he's just like, I'm here, boy, time to buy me a house. So he sits down, and he's like, and he puts in a bid of $2 million. Already thinks that he's won it. And then, much to his chagrin, more people start putting in bids on this auction. And every time someone does, he puts in another bid. And then someone else will put in a bid, and be like, what are you doing? What are you putting a bid in for? That's not how this works. Every time he did it, it got funnier. And I knew what the punchline of this was, because we all knew what the punchline of it was. But I'm sitting there going like, oh, I can't wait for this punchline. Because all of a sudden you hear this like huge shout of $8 million to the enemy. It's like, who the hell was that? Turned around, and it's the $1 million man, Ted DiBiase. And it was, and So this is funny for several reasons. A, Cameron Grimes is great. B, the Million Dollar Man is great. C, the whole situation is so nonsense, it's absolutely wonderful. There's something about this that makes me laugh every time, and that is that Cameron Grimes calls him by his full name. Like, it's not just, he doesn't say DiBiase or Ted. He calls him Ted DiBiase, like, every single, it's proper my level of comedy. And yeah. And then at the end of it, shouting, why Ted DiBiase? Why?
I don't care if this segment or these segments, any of this goes anywhere forever. If they can continue to find ways to just make Cameron Grimes being involved with things where he's getting shown up by Ted DiBiase for no reason. Why is Ted DiBiase stalking this man and just outbidding
him? He's the real Million Dollar Man. He wants to show this young kid that he's the real Million Dollar Man.
I guess, but yeah, I just find this so funny, and I don't really know why, other than it is funny, but so often WWE comedy just doesn't hit, and Cameron Grimes just can carry stuff like this. He's the perfect kind of over actor, yeah. And then you have someone like Ted DiBiase, who's just one of the best characters in the history of wrestling, to balance this, I guess, or make it even more wacky. Oh, it's fantastic. And as I've stated in the past, as I stated on Twitter earlier today, Ted DiBiase not only has the best laugh in wrestling history, he has one of the best laughs in human history. Nobody laughs better than Ted DiBiase. Just give me this every week, forever. I don't need a match. I don't need him to be a manager. Just keep giving me these segments.
One of the greatest moments in WWF history is Ted DiBiase kicking the basketball. It gets funnier every time I see it. And it is so brilliant to be able to see him back on TV again. I cannot get enough of this. Like you, I don't need to lead this to Cameron Grimes versus DiBiase on pay-per-view. I don't need to lead this to DiBiase being a manager. If that's what we get, grand. But I'm just quite happy to have a lot of these backstage skits or out of the arena skits. Absolutely love it.
Yeah.
We have got video promo for Tony Storm versus Zoe Stark, which I believe is on next week's show. And then we got Oney Lorcan versus Kyle O'Reilly. Yep, you're excited. And then we got Oney Lorcan versus Kyle O'Reilly. Kyle O'Reilly is an impressive man because on one side of things, he is like one of the best looking dudes in wrestling. He's got great hair. He's got a great beard. And when he's wearing a Canadian tuxedo, he looks $1 million. He looks absolutely awesome. And then there's the other side of him where he shows up wearing these sunglasses and this little hat. And I'm like, oh, you look like a tool. I do not want to be friends with you whatsoever. I want to be cool with that. The other one, I do not want any friends with you and your blue sunglasses and your crap little hat. Get out of here.
Yeah, we've talked a lot on this show about how I don't feel that cool Kyle actually is cool, because regular, not manufactured Kyle O'Reilly, I think, is pretty cool. He does his little air guitar with the tag belt, the whole deal. It's kind of goofy, but I see that and be like, I don't want to hang out with that guy. That guy seems fun. This guy that I see, I believe I could see this guy on a megaphone at Yonge and Dundas Square in Toronto, spouting off about something with his fedora and his stupid sunglasses. And I'm just like, oh God, not a fan of a cool Kyle. But once the bell rings, forget all that. We got good
absolutely
stuff.
Because then he's just awesome Kyle. Yeah. No, I want to go to a festival with Canadian Tuxedo Kyle. I do not want to go to a festival with cool Kyle. This match was really, really great because, of course, it is. It's Kyle O'Reilly versus Oney Lorcan. Like, it is hard-hitting stuff. And eventually, Kyle O'Reilly wins with the knee drop afterwards. But then we got the return of Bobby Fish. Bubbles Fish just randomly just comes out. It just starts beating up and making sure that everyone is fine, because who was it that attacked him after the match?
It was Pete Dunne.
It was Pete Dunne, wasn't it? I was going to say it was Pete Dunne. And I was like, no, he was earlier in the show. Yeah, Pete Dunne. So then they kind of like stare off. And you're like, oh, my God. Like, Red Dragon are standing in the ring together. What is going to happen here? Like, are we going to get, because Kyle's on this singles run, what does this mean for Bobby Fish? And they basically just have a chat where, like, Bobby's just like, you're doing your own thing. And Kyle's like, yeah, no, I'm on my own path at the moment. And he's just like, that's cool. I respect that. I'll see you later. And that was it. And they just sort of like just parted ways. And it was so not what I was expecting for a Bubbles Fish return.
But it's made me more excited about his return because I need to know what his feelings are and like what his motivations are.
Yeah, and I think they did a really good job of expressing that, where I didn't know what Bobby Fish was going to do upon his return. I still really don't. But at the same time, I don't think there's that high of a ceiling for Bobby Fish. He's always been the guy in the Undisputed Era where it's like, if they all break up, go their separate ways, I don't think he's necessarily going to do that much. And that's a shame because I like Bobby Fish a lot. But I thought they did a very good job of wrapping up the Undisputed Era thing without making this big angle. Like, he didn't need to turn on Kyle O'Reilly. And to me, that would be like the really easy thing to do. But they didn't do that. And I appreciate that because it leaves the door open to do more things later. And long-term storytelling, to me, is the best kind of storytelling. So if you're able to just kind of like put that in the back of your mind, but still have it be there, like they didn't forget about it. They didn't treat like you were dumb. Because to have this right off the bat closes out that chapter for now, but the next chapter still exists. We're just not there yet. And that's something to look forward to.
And we got a fantastic main event of Santos Escobar versus Kushida for the NXT Cruiserweight Championship in a 2 out of 3 falls match. We got some intangibles here. So,
yes.
Santos Escobar, he had 3. His intangibles are natural born leader, ring IQ, and lucha.
Oh God, just lucha, not lucha libre.
No, just lucha.
Oh, there's
no other thing there. It just says and lucha, just as a word.
Oh my and God. Then, amazing.
Kushida also had 3, which were technician, ring IQ. So they both got ring IQ. They both got the same intangible there. And precision.
Not precise. Precision. Oh God.
They are so, so dumb. But it makes me laugh. And I proper popped for lucha. As a concept. I thoroughly enjoyed that, but also I thoroughly enjoyed this match. Like, it started off with those like the biggest knobheads you've ever seen, MSK taking out Legado del Fantasma, and the referee sending everyone to the back. So we just got the straight 2-on-1, a 2 out of 3 falls match. I've got one complaint about this match, and it's a complaint I've got about a lot of 2 out of 3 falls matches, which is when you do a fall and then 10 seconds later you do the next fall.
Yeah,
it's like, well, okay, so that sort of rendered the 2 out of 3 falls thing a bit pointless then. I've never liked it when wrestling companies do that.
Yeah. To me, this is, if you have like the right minds putting together a 2 out of 3 falls match, it can be like one of the best matches ever. As we saw with Okada and Omega having the best match of all time in a 2 out of 3 falls match. Like, you need to plan a 2 out of 3 falls match differently. And there are other ways to do it too. Like, I thought the Daniel Bryan and Sheamus 2 out of 3 falls match from Extreme Rules 2012, back check, I thought that was another really good way to do it, where you have Bryan go in and sacrifice the first fall, getting himself disqualified, hitting him. He either hit him with a chair or he had him in the ropes, but wouldn't let go of the hold. And he sacrificed that first fall to weaken his opponent before immediately hitting the second fall. And that's like a different way of doing it, as opposed to just like fall 1, fall 2, long stretch of match, fall 3. Because really, if you just took out that first and second fall, you could just have a long match and nothing would really change in this case. To me, exactly. You need to change the structure of the match and do it in more of an intriguing way than just like, well, here's a pin and here's a pin or here's a submission or whatever. Like, you need to do more to make it feel like it adds to the match.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. Like, it was, I just don't know why they, yeah, it's my only negative I've got against this, because actually once you got into that third fall thing, it was absolutely awesome. And it was a bit like, actually, I remember like having a similar complaint about the Adam Cole, Johnny Gargano 2 out of 3 falls match
that
they had at TakeOver, which it was just like, this match didn't need to be a 2 out of 3 falls match, because the match actually just like, it finally got into gear when you got into the third fall. So you may as well have just taken that element out, because it didn't add anything to the match. And again, I don't think the stipulation added to the match here. But once we got that first you know, third out of the match, and we just focused on the final portion of this, dude, it was rad, man. It was so, so great. Just like these amazing transitions and counters and big spots and this and that. I absolutely, I just loved it. And like all of us, like, and then Kushida wins with this incredible, like, suplex chokehold. It almost felt like it was a hoverboard lock suplex. It was this amazing, and they just, like, the only thing they could call on commentary was a unique pinning combination. And I was like, I mean, yeah, that is an incredibly clunky way of saying it, but I guess you're right. It was a unique pinning combination. I thought this match absolutely ruled.
Yeah. I mean, this is NXT at its best to me, just having like an absolute blowaway match in the main event. Like, you could have put this match on a takeover and it would have fit in perfectly. This was just awesome. I love these two guys. Kushida, I've always wanted to see do more in NXT, and now he's being given the chance to do that. I've said a million times, like, his greatest strength has always been his wrestling. And if you're going to put him in like a 20, 25 minute main event match for the NXT Cruiserweight title, do that. Have him be like, do an open challenge or something. Just get 205 live guys to come in, because his wrestling is his strength, and getting him to wrestle more often means it'll be a better show and he will be better utilized. This was just fantastic, man. I loved every minute of it. Great show. 5 out of 5 show, like an easy home run, grand slam, slam dunk, touchdown, 5 out of 5 show.
This show ruled. I loved every single thing that was on this show. I could not get enough of it. Each segment led into something great, and then that great thing just carried on into something else that was great. All the matches were a lot of fun. All the backstage segments completely made sense. Everyone's promos were great. We got a cool new faction debut, and we had some slapping wrestling, man. It was just a wonderful, wonderful 2 hours of wrestling. And like, more than that, it made me want to watch next week's show, because they've got a lot of stuff on next week that I want to see. And they've got some off next in a couple of weeks' time that I also want to see as well. And there's stuff that was set up here that I want to see down the line. This, like you say, home run of a show. Could not get enough of this. And as I said earlier, is this man the future of NXT? I said it in 2019. I'll say it again. Yes, he is.
Absolutely. Right. If every show was this good, I'd be the happiest luchador in the world.
Lucha. Right. Charles Berg said, no dog photo today. Those are for Tuesdays because Raw is pain. I'm hopeful for Swerve and his faction, but as WrestleTalk's unofficial bad name creator, I have the authority to say these are some bad names. So I've made a new member, introducing Pierce, but with dollar signs for the S's. Jam that jam. These names are awesome.
I love Dollar. That's an awesome name.
So that was actually like, that was the moment that tipped it over the edge for me. Because they made their entrance and everything, and the chair was cool when they sat down, and the guy was like, I'm Top Dollar. And I was like, that's it. This is the greatest group. This group absolutely rules now. And then when, Brandon was like, yeah, I'm B-Fab. I'm like, oh, it's even better. This is absolutely amazing.
We need a name that sounds clever at first, but is less funny every time you hear it. I've got it. B-Fab. Perfect.
C6969. Hi, guys. I don't know. Does everyone know right with Poochie? Yeah, Poochie. Hi, guys. Just joined late because I was failing a college exam. Anyway, my baby Bobby is back. He's home. Unpopular opinion, but he's the cutest now former member of the Undisputed Era. Love Gonzalez versus Martinez. Great action throughout. Cannot wait for Quizzlemania. Thank you so much for joining us, Sadie Lady. Also, that is an excellent itchy and scratchy t-shirt, Tempest. I saw you wear that on purpose. Yeah. Bacon Rash has said, hey, lads. Firstly, great to have Luke here today. DiBiase and Grimes, I could watch a film about them. They're amazing. The main event scene on NXT is great, but who finally beats Cross and when? Finally, I like MSK, but I want the titles on the Grizzled Young Vets because I love Zach Gibson. Jam that jam. Everyone should love Zach Gibson. He's the best.
Yeah. As far as who beats Cross, Isaiah Swerve Scott. Put my money on that right now. He should do it. He should do it. Not necessarily right now, but he's the guy. He should be the next NXT champion.
I say this story every time I'm on a stream where I get to talk about Zach Gibson. One of the funniest things I've ever seen in wrestling, or promo-wise, was at a Rev Pro show, and it was Zach Gibson versus Toriano. And he comes out and he's cutting a promo on Toriano. And he's kind of promo on the fans as well. And he's like, you marks around ringside here, reading Dave Meltzer's Observer and listening to his radio show, looking in that ring now and saying, bloody hell, Grado looks different in real life.
what a god among men.
Oh, it's so good. Dylan Diaz. Hey, Luke Tempest. I want to mention Dexter Lumis as he wasn't on this week's NXT. Maybe I'll save him. Yeah. Maybe they'll save him for a bigger role next week, hoping to see more decks. Also, everyone is home safe. Jam that jam. Yeah, I didn't get to see any Dexter Lumis this week. Clearly waiting for Pete to come back.
Yeah.
Jay Gupta said, looking at the Grimes sketch, I wish he and Ted DiBiase were in a time loop like Doctor Strange and Dormammu. With Ted DiBiase going, I'm here to outbid you. Every time Grimes thinks he's won. On a comics note, have you guys watched Invincible on Amazon yet? Do you have any thoughts? Jam that jam.
Have. Very good show. Excellent cast. I mean, you can't talk about it without getting into spoilers, so I won't do that. But I really like how they talk about how superpowers work and how like you develop them and that sort of stuff. Love that.
I have not seen it yet, and if my wife's not into it, which I don't think she will be, I don't think I'll ever. It'll be one of those things where it's like, that's why I didn't watch The Mandalorian for like a year or so until after it. Like, I didn't see it until the second season had finished, and that's because my wife watched the first episode and was like, "This is not for me." And I'm like, "Cool, I'll just watch it without you then." Then I never had the time to watch it, so it'll be. I'll see it in a couple of years' time probably. Nate S said, "Tempest intangible can wear a mask for an hour plus. Luke's intangible." Puts in a lot of hours. The problem there, Nate, is that those are too many words.
Yeah.
You need to be able to find, like, so Tempest for that?
Mask.
Durable.
Durable. Ah. Not durability.
No. Durable. Yeah. That is what you need. And Juan says, hola, Luke. Hola, Tempest. I have a non-wrestling related question. If I want to apply here as a moderator, how can I do that? I believe you may have already emailed the right place, which is support@wrestletalk.com. I'm passing that on to the people who need to know. And Misha has said, WrestleTalk's intangibles are better and moreover than the NXT intangibles they stole the gimmick from. WrestleTalk is greater than WWE, but then we already knew that. Jam that jam. Yes, please. Needs more air horn just for you, Misha, as part of the under consultation posse. Where are you? There it is. You love to see it. How have you found like doing a lot of podcasts this week? Because you had, you know, SmackDown on Saturday, you had Raw yesterday, you've got NXT today, you've then got SmackDown again coming up, and this feels like it's the most podcasts Tempest has done in quite actually. Oh, and you did AEW last week as well, so like it is like the most podcast that you have done for us
for a 7-day stretch. I've been on every WrestleTalk podcast. So if you dislike me, sorry.
You weren't on the Friday show with me and Denise.
That's true. As far as covering different shows, as far as podcast reviews, I shall say.
There you go.
I've been on all of them. So if you're tired of me by now, sorry, not sorry. I've found it to be a great amount of fun. And I contribute that to a number of factors. Having lovely co-hosts helps, you know, not just trying to blow smoke, but we have a very lovely team here at WrestleTalk, and honestly, going on and talking about wrestling for an hour, sometimes I thought maybe a tedious act, depending on who I'm talking to, but you lot have made it just fantastic.
So my question for you, Tempest, is a question I've been wanting to ask for quite some time, is when did you get into nu metal?
Oh, that's a good question. I think wrestling helped with that a lot, you know, because I really did not start getting into music until I was maybe about 11 or 12 years old. You know, I just kind of, before that, I would listen to whatever was in the car or whatever my parents were playing. So there was a lot of like, you know, Beatles, Queen, Led Zeppelin, stuff like that, Rolling Stones. But once I turned 11, I think I got Guitar Hero 3 on the Nintendo Wii. And shortly afterwards, maybe a month later, I started watching wrestling. And then I got like my first iPod later that year. So those two together kind of helped fuel my early playlists. And those early days, it was a lot of just like WWE pay-per-view theme songs, because I was an impressionable 11-year-old that didn't know, you know, what was popular. I just knew that I listened to this 3 Days Grace song and I was like, oh, I like that. That sounds nice. And I listened to this Seether song and I listened to this and that and the other thing. And I was like, I like this music. And of course, as you get older, like there isn't as much of it that gets released nowadays. Obviously, like the heyday of nu metal was like early to mid 2000s. So I went back and would listen to different things from those eras. And a lot of them were like, what were the pay-per-view theme songs in 2003? Yeah. As kind of my guiding factor. But I don't know, like every once in a while, I still have the urge to just put on some nu metal and listen to it. You know, especially if I, yeah, like if I want to be in a bad mood, you know, and I just need some fuel. Like when the Green Bay Packers lost the championship game this year, and I put out a tweet just saying like, give me your grimiest nu metal recommendations. I'm going on a walk and I just need some hate fuel. And I got just loads of people giving me tons of recommendations. And I know you woke up the next day and was like, oh, this is my wheelhouse. There's so many things I could recommend. But yeah, it's just kind of been that thing that stuck with me since I was like 11.
Yeah, there was a crazy moment there in that story when you were told me that you got Guitar Hero 3 when you were 11. And I was like, oh man, I'd graduated university and I think I was in like my second job when I got Guitar Hero 3, also for the Nintendo Wii, because it was badass because you put the Wiimote into the guitar and that is what activated the thing. I thought it was really cool. But yeah, like when you put out that tweet, it was just sort of very fortunate timing because I had just put together my nu metal classics playlist on Spotify. Because I just went through this period last summer where I was just thinking back on a lot of tunes. I was listening to some tunes like from my old iPods, and I was like, man, that's a banger, that's a banger, that's a banger. And then I thought, I should really put together a playlist of just the nu metal tracks that I like by the bands that I like. And I can kind of like, and I've kind of curated it over the months because there's been times where I've been listening back to it and being like, well, I put this song in as a recommendation. Turns out I don't like it. So I don't like Killswitch Engage. I just don't. And it's really not for me. But having said that, my takes are quite appalling because I unironically like a lot of Limp Bizkit's early stuff. I think $3 Bill is a great album. I think Significant Other is a great album. Chocolate Starfish is When It Goes Off the Rails. That is a bad album. And then pretty much everything after that. But like me and Ollie reviewed WrestleMania 19 for WrestleTalk Extra. And that soundtrack by Limp Bizkit's Crack Addict. And I was on the show being like, Ollie, honest to God, I unironically love this song. This is probably the best song that Limp Bizkit have done post-Significant Other. I think it's and it's not even a real song. Like they didn't release it in any form whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean, I totally get that. You know, I went through a similar playlist that I'd put together. Of course, my playlist for this kind of music is just called 11 to 13.
Nice.
But again, I'll do the same thing. And, you know, I made this playlist probably a few years ago before I had Spotify and before just adding music to playlists was so much easier. Yeah. I mean, I've never been one to like sit down and listen to a lot of Limp Bizkit, but I know that the songs that they put together for WWE shows have always like, it's one of those bands kind of like Nickelback where you're like supposed to hate this band, but I don't really hate Limp Bizkit, you know? And, like it's one of those, it's a band that you can kind of clown on because it's the fun band to make fun of, but I don't know, man, my way bops.
I had the same thing, dude, because like I remember going to Reading Festival 2001 and Fear Factory were playing. Yeah. And like the running gag of Fear Factory at that time was everyone called them Fat Factory because they were all like big chunky lads. And like, you know, they're playing like pretty much all the best stuff off of Obsolete and Digimortal and cracker. What was their first album called? I can't remember now. But like everyone in the crowd, because we're a British crowd, just kept chanting after each song, "Who ate all the pies? Who ate all the pies? You fat bastard! You fat bastard! You ate all the pies!" And like, and so like, it was one of those times where it's like, oh yeah, Fat Factory are the fun band to dunk on. But also at the same time, I'm there going like, yeah, but Obsolete slaps though, doesn't it? It's a really, really good album. And like, for us, it's not great, but there's some tracks on Digimortal that I think absolutely rule.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you tell me, how did you get into new? This is just going to be a new metal podcast this week. How did you get into that? Because obviously, like, with the age difference being what it is, you were there for like the peak and the rise of new metal, you know, coming out of the 90s and whatnot, whereas I wasn't necessarily like in a mindset, being like 4 and 5 years old, that I would be able to appreciate such a thing at the time. So you tell me your story.
So my brother and my cousin are both 5 and 6 years older than I am, so they're the older cool kids. And my cousin Chris in particular was like, he has always been a metalhead. You know, he was born in 1980 and he was a metalhead from a very young age. He was really into his hair metal, absolutely loves Metallica, absolutely loved Slayer. And he had his bands. And then because 1994, he's 14 years old, and Liverpool had an amazing music scene and a lot of like that, you know, it's one of the big cities in the UK. So a lot of like the bands would go and tour those areas. So he just went to a lot of like gigs and stuff. And so like through him, I discovered Korn. Korn were like my gateway into new metal and actually pretty much into what became my music taste. And I got that through Chris, and he lent me Korn's album. So this would have been maybe 1996, I think he might have lent me that. So that I would have been maybe 10, 11 years old. And he lent it to me on CD. And I remember recording it to a cassette. And then it was a cassette that could not hold the full album on one side, because there's only about 45 minute cassettes. So I basically cut off like before the last track hit. So I've never really, as much as I keep saying, I've listened to that album loads of times in full. Really, I haven't, because my cassette tape did not have the full album on it. And the other side on it had Green Day's Dookie. So it wasn't even just like I could turn the side over and play that. So that was basically my gateway. And then from like, Korn, it was early Incubus, and it was Fear Factory, and it was Limp Bizkit. It was the Deftones. Deftones was one of my big bands. Like, I absolutely adored Adrenaline and Around the Fur. And I just sort of like built up this collection of new metal stuff. And then when I was going to Reading Festival from 99 onwards, it was just like a lot of the new metal bands were there. And like when 99 hit and Slipknot came out, oh, I fell into them so hard, because I was 14. So I was like the perfect age for Slipknot to hit and being like, okay, cool, this is my band. Whereas like Chris, being a bit older than me, you know, he's now 20 years old by the time that Slipknot hit. He's like, it's a bad version of Marilyn Manson. Like, that was basically, it was just like, they sound as bad. He's like, they sound as bad as Korn and they look as bad as Marilyn Manson. Like, that was now his like new sort of take on them as a new band. But I had that for Mudvayne. When Mudvayne came out, I was like, yeah, it's just a Slipknot knockoff though, isn't it?
A couple of grizzled old 20-year-olds looking down their nose at this new music.
It's because I'm there like 14 years old and I've got my Deftones like long sleeve t-shirt that I've got Adrenaline, which by the way, I still have and I still wear to this day. It is so faded, and it once was black. It is now pretty much a light gray, and it has got holes all the way, like it's got so many holes on there, but I still wear it. It's like, it's my comfy top to wear. But yeah, it's like I'm wearing that at Reading Festival 2000, and our Chris there being the, you know, the Scouser veteran that he is, being like, oh yeah, it's just a bad version of Korn, it's like a bad version of Marilyn Manson. And he was a dad at that point as well. So like it was just like, so that was my gateway into new metal and into like the mid 90s.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can really appreciate stuff like that, because one of the best friends that I have in the world, you know, he and I, not necessarily bonded, but when we were coming together as friends in about eighth grade or so, his like favorite band was Slipknot, you know, and this is around the time where, again, Slipknot was on Guitar Hero 3. So I knew who they were. And that gave me an excuse to listen to more of their stuff. And Well, like, I wouldn't say that they're one of my absolute favorite bands, but I've definitely got some Slipknot music that I can slip into my playlists from time to time. But it's just one of those things, man, where a band like that coming around at the right time in your life can help influence different things. And I can really appreciate that, whether that was in 2000 or 2010.
Matt, when Wait and Bleed came out, like, my best friend at the time was called Rory, and like, he was also like, he was starting to get into new metal music as well, mostly through like the stuff that I was listening to. He was also like the guy that really introduced me a lot to wrestling, because I got into wrestling, and then he had them all on VHS. Like, his parents bought him like a butt. Like, he had like every WWF pay-per-view from 1998 through to like the current, well, I say the current day, it's 2000, it's 1999. He had them all on VHS, but he also had ECW tapes as well. So like, that was my gateway into watching wrestling. But he was the one who showed me Wait and Bleed, because it was on this, it was a might have been a Kerrang CD or might have been a Metal Hammer CD. It was the opening track on there. And he was like, you got to hear this. And it blew my tiny little mind. I was like, this is amazing. This is the coolest track I've ever heard.
Yeah. Oh, I would imagine those tapes as well were how you discovered Raven, the other big influence in your life.
Dude, and people have said, like, why is Raven your favorite wrestler? I was like, because he dressed like me. Like, when I was getting into wrestling, I was like, oh, that guy looks exactly like I do, because I've got long hair. I want to have a beard. He wears Dinosaur Jr. t-shirts. Guess what I'm wearing? A Dinosaur Jr. t-shirt. He's wearing a buttload of flannel. Guess what I'm wearing? A load of flannel. I've got loads of holes in my jeans, and I'm wearing big boots. He's me. Like, he's exactly how I dress.
Absolutely one of the wrestlers of the 90s, man. I don't even want to continue on with NXT at this point.
Well, I know we're gonna go to NXT, and I was about to say, did you see that video that got shared around a lot over the weekend of that WCW show, like Beach Brawl, where it was just it was a battle royal that was commentated by Raven, but it's soundtracked by Fear Factory. I was like, this is take me back. This is the greatest thing.
Luke's world's colliding.
It really was, because I was watching the video. I was like, man, I want to watch this video because it's WCW wrestling by a beach. And then I heard, I was like, it's Fear Factory. They're playing Edge Crusher. This is brilliant. Right, we've got to bring this podcast to a close. So if you're listening to this, we've also got the Backlash predictions. Go and check that out as well. Ollie and I should be back tomorrow doing the AEW podcast. So thumbs up for that. Me and Tempest will be back doing the SmackDown review as well. So we'll have more chat like this, most likely. But until then, take care. I love you. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.